That's stunning to me for his attorney to say bad behavior is not criminal behavior. Well, Danny Savalas, some bad behavior is absolutely criminal behavior. And if the line is basically he didn't invent the casting couch, his defense is going to be he's a total disgusting sleazebag, but not a criminal.
It's an interesting tack because in any rape or sexual assault case, you have two primary avenues of defense. First, it never happened. I didn't do it. She's lying. But then if
but the second is these drop dead, gorgeous, brilliant, young, lovely, aspiring actresses wanted to bone me. Give me a break.
So I was struck by a story that I read on Fox News this week. Oh, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 279. My name is Melvin. Thank you for being here. Yeah, I read the stories on Fox News with some regularity, and obviously I'm not going to foxnews.com for information. I'm going to foxnews.com so that I can get the appropriate talking points. And there was a story there about Betsy DeVos. And the guy wrote this long, glowing, gushing, drooling article about Title IX and the reform of the way that they handle sexual assaults. I'll get to that in just a minute, but I want to read you a story. Well, I want to give you highlights from a story that I read, a long-form piece over at the Huffington Post. And the title of the article was, I Was a Cable Guy, and I Saw the Worst of America. The woman's name is Lauren Huff. Lauren Huff is just about middle age, I believe, and she is a lesbian. And it's pretty clear. She's got the short hair and all the rest. And she talks about her time working in the D.C., Virginia area as a cable guy. She goes into, you know, the conditions that she works under. She goes into the people that she met. And I want to highlight some of that for you before I get to the Betsy DeVos thing. So one of the stories that she tells is she mentions going into an anti-gay lobbyist's house. And there are pictures all over the guy's office of him with Pat Buchanan and Jerry Falwell and his job. His job is to get anti-gay legislation passed. This is what he does. And when she walked by his son's room, she noticed that it was all painted pink and that the floor was littered with Barbies. And this is his son, which obviously she says she's, you know, she doesn't have a problem with. But she says here, and I quote, "How the F do you actively work to ensure that the world is a more dangerous place for your beautiful little kid?" Pointing out, he may have a safe space inside their house, but when he gets out there, the world that was created by his father through all of this anti-gay legislation lobbying, it's not going to be the same for him out there. And not to mention the things that are being passed now that affect people out there right now, people that are already going through the hate that comes from this anti-gay part of Capitol Hill. So whenever she would get a work order, sometimes it would say irate at the top. Irate could mean a number of different things. It usually meant that they were angry, that they were calling a lot. Irate was a word that was put on a work order, usually when it was somebody that was a watcher of Fox News. She goes on to tell one story. She says, but irate for this particular job meant that it wasn't going to be, she tells a story about a woman who answers the door in lingerie on a previous call. And then she says, but irate for this call wasn't a woman in lingerie. It was a guy who decided to pull out his penis while she was working on his television. She talks about the Fox News cult that she dealt with. She says, quoting here, maybe irate was an irate Channel 72 out. That's Fox News. And those calls were ones that they dreaded. It was worse when the comment was followed by a repeat call. See, when the cable went out and it was one of these Fox bots, they would call and they would call and they would, because Fox News is their lifeline. It is the oxygen that they breathe. It's probably the most effective propaganda ever. Repeat call. Repeat meant someone had been there. If I was someone, I could call and ask, and he'd tell me, be careful, because the a-hole kept calling me boy. You ever heard the Fox and Box? Hey, boy. It's that kind of thing. Quoting here, the tap where the cable line connects, now she's in the house, was in a neighboring yard. And there was a dog. There was a dog door on the back patio of the yard. She said, I like dogs, but I'm not an idiot. And I told them that it would be a week to 7 days to get a new line. Okay, she said, I can't fix it. The line is under their house. Clearly, they have a dog. They're not home. I can't do it right now. So she goes out to her truck. She says, I remember filling out work orders and emailing my supervisor to give him a heads up on a possible call from a member of every cable tech's favorite rage cult. She's talking about the Fox people. When his wife knocked on my van window, she stepped back and called me ma'am, which was nice. Her husband with the tucked in polo shirt had asked my name. I told him Lauren. He heard Lawrence because it fit what he saw and asked me if he could call me Larry, like Larry the cable guy. Guys like that use your name as a weapon, she goes on to say. Larry explained to me why I have to sit around here from 1 to 3 waiting on you, and then you don't show up until 3:17. He's now barking at her. Does that seem like a good customer service to you, Larry? And now you're telling me 7 to 10 days. Larry, I'm getting really tired of hearing this S. I'm not going to say the swears. Guys like that, it was just safer to let them think that I was a man, she says. She said she was sorry about him, said it's fine. I said that there really wasn't anything I could do. Now she's talking to the wife. And the wife, she says, blink backed the flood of tears that she had been holding since God knows when. So now the wife is trying to talk to Lauren and say, hey, can we get the cable back? He really needs his Fox News. Quoting here, it's just when he has Fox, he has Obama to hate. If he doesn't have that, and she kept looking over her shoulder while she's talking to Lauren the whole time. She's terrified of him. I'm sorry, she said. I just need to give him Fox. And so Lauren got out of her van and she attempted to fix it. She goes on to point out, she said, blue collar customers were always my favorite. They don't treat you like a servant. They don't tell you we'd like the help to use the side door. They don't assume you're an idiot because you wear a name tag and you work and your hands are calloused. The books on their shelves aren't bound in leather. And the spines are cracked, most of them. When you turn on the TV, it's not Fox. They're the only customers who tip. One woman asked her to shimmy down into a crawl space that held 3 feet of water and about a foot of spare under her floorboards. A snake swam past the opening when she looked down. And she says, it doesn't look like it's a copperhead. So why don't you go ahead and crawl down there anyway? She went to one call where the problem was dead batteries on a remote. And the customer said that they didn't think that dead batteries were their responsibility. She points out all of the marijuana that she would see growing in people's houses. And she says, so this is a good time to say, if you're planning on growing massive amounts of marijuana, look, I respect it. But don't use a $3 splitter from CVS when you run your own cable line. Sooner or later, you'll have a cable tech in your basement and you'll feel the need to give them a freezer bag full of pot to relieve your paranoia, which is appreciated, don't get me wrong. Stoners, I adore you. I mean it. You never yell. I can ask you to use your bathroom because you're stoned. You never call in complaints. But maybe behind the television isn't the most effective place to hide your bong when the cable guy's coming over. One of the things that she points out is as a woman, she never felt comfortable. She never felt like it was okay to use the bathroom. One thing she mentions at the beginning of the story, she says, in this job, I had to pee a lot. And I had to hold it a lot. And all the creepy-ass houses that she went into, and it wasn't that she could never use the bathroom, but it was so seldom that she felt comfortable whenever she went into somewhere. She talks about one place where she went to where she said, I'm sorry, the wiring's in the basement. I need to go into the basement. And she went down there and she found a sex dungeon and somebody inside of a cage. Not illegal, but just, wow. And she says, the next job was a short little effer who walked like a little teapot and who beat his kids. Sometimes you can tell. Some of us recognize the look in their eyes, the bite of fear in the air. He followed me into the office and he rubbed himself against, this is a dude. He rubbed himself against my ass when I leaned over to unplug the modem. She says, I let it happen that time. Sometimes you know which guys you can't fight back against. There were a lot of those. Those I never forgot. They seep into your skin like cat piss. But you can't shower them off. It's part of why I don't mind most people assuming that I was a man. Each time I had to calculate the odds of something worse against the odds of me getting back to my van. She says, I remember training a guy around the time I was 6 years in. He had been hired at $5 more an hour than I was making, 31% more. I asked around. We weren't allowed to discuss pay, and we also weren't allowed to smoke pot, although most of us did. We weren't allowed to work on opiates either. We were all working hurt. She points out, I can't handle opiates, but if I'd wanted them, there were plenty of guys that were stealing them from customers' bathrooms. I could have bought whatever I needed after any team meeting. And that's the thing that they don't tell you about opiate addiction. People are in pain because unless you went to college, the only way that you can earn a decent living is by breaking your body or risking your life. Plumbers, electricians, steam fitters, welders, mechanics, cable guys, linemen, fishermen, garbage men, the options are endless. And if painkillers show up on your drug test, you have that prescription from the last time you fell off the roof. Because that's the other thing about these jobs. They all require drug tests when you get hurt. Smoke pot one night, whether for fun or because you hurt too much to sleep. The company doesn't have to pay for your injury when your van slides down an icy off-ramp 3 weeks later. She says, I chose pot to numb my head and my body every night, but it was the bigger risk. She's talking about over opioids. I want to address that really quickly. So opioids are legal and very dangerous, and they're a highly addictive painkiller, but it's the pharmaceutical industry, so that's okay. Marijuana, though it's still becoming legalized, it's legalized in a number of states, medical, in fewer states for recreational, but I work the same kind of job, the job that I have my health insurance through. If I get into any kind of an accident, I got rear-ended 2 months ago. Some ding-dong not paying attention rear-ended my truck. No damage, you know, no injuries. But I had to go in for a don't pass, go, don't collect $200 drug test. Just go, go, go. Why? Because they would like to not have to pay for anything that happens to me as a result of that accident. And this would give them the opportunity to just can me and bring in somebody who's willing to piss clean. I don't think my employer should be able to demand my piss. She goes on to say, I probably should have stolen pills. It would have made up for the fact that I was making less than every other tech that I asked. Making $5 less an hour, because she's a woman. They don't like you talking about your pay for a reason. Some had been there longer, most hadn't. I wasn't the only female tech because really, why the F was I even doing that job? She points out, I'm doing this job because I didn't go to college. I joined the Air Force. They kicked me out for being gay. I'd since worked at a gay bar, Home Depot's, Starbucks, Lowe's, 7-Eleven, a livery service, construction, a dog groomer, probably 10 more crappy jobs along the way until I was offered a few dollars more, just enough to pay the rent. And that's when she decided to become a cable guy. She goes on to tell more stories about how she got creeped out and harassed while she was working. And she points out, she says, the guys could always call for help on a job. Guys call other guys. Guys would go out and help the other guys. No problem. She said, if I called, some of them wouldn't answer, talking about her fellow techs. Some I'd asked before and taken crap from them for not being able to do something that they couldn't have done either, she points out. One of the guys... Now, this is going to get gross for a minute. If you don't want to hear this, just skip ahead 30 seconds. One of them told me my pussy smelled amazing while he held a ladder for me. One never stopped asking if I had ever tried penis. He kept saying that I needed his. And for the most part, I like to tell myself I could handle their taunts and harassment. But I wasn't calling them for help. Sometimes I'd have to reschedule my job because there was no one around that I could ask for help. And rescheduling meant that she would lose points for that day. So the points thing is interesting. go out, you do a job, they get, there's a point system based on what kind of job it is, you know, and how much money it makes the company and all these things. And because she would have to deal with these creepy dudes, sex dungeons, you know, ask for help, you know, deal with these Fox bots, this Fox death cult, there was a lot of jobs that she wasn't able to do at the time or would have to pass on to somebody else. And therefore, at her job, the point system that determined both their raises and vacations and all kinds of other things, she didn't end up with as many points. She goes on to say, she says, I was a great tech. I was an absolutely fabulous tech. But because I didn't have the same support system that the other guys had at the cable company, the amount of points that she earned were very, very low. She had high customer satisfaction, but the points that she was able to earn because she didn't have a support system was very, very low. Then she went to Dick Cheney's house. She says, my supervisor called and said, look at the work order that I just dropped you. You're going to thank me. I recognize the name, Mary Cheney, the former vice president's daughter. I don't know why he thought I'd thank him, so I called him back. Why the F are you sending me here? Thought you'd be happy, he says. They're lesbians. Dude, they're married. He didn't say anything. I said, Google her and tell me that you still think you're doing me a favor. He said that I was just pissed because they were Republicans. I said I was pissed because Dick Cheney is an effing war criminal. He called me a communist. Said a couple of guys had been out there, internet problem. Read the notes. I didn't actually have a choice, but with the pressure off to complete 12 jobs a day, I found that I could actually have fun at work, joke with my boss about whether or not the Cheneys constituted a favor just because, hey, we're all lesbians. Mary Cheney wasn't home, which was good. The further I was from Dick, the more likely I was to keep my mouth shut. Her wife was friendly and talkative in the way that old people are friendly and talkative because they haven't had a visitor since Christmas. The house had a few problems. I'd fix one, she'd call my supervisor, I'd have to go back to fix another. But I finally got it fixed. A few months later, my boss called and started with, don't kill me. He was sending me to Dick Cheney's house, and Dick Cheney was home. He had an assistant or a secretary or maybe security who followed me around while I checked connections and signal levels. I'd already found a system problem outside. I just wanted to make sure I never had to set foot in his house again. Dick walked into the office while I was working. He was reading from a stack of papers and ignored me. I told the assistant it would probably be a week or so. I put in the orders and he had my supervisor's number. And then he said something to the effect of, you do understand that this is the former vice president. Cheney looked up. I panicked and said the first thing that came to mind. Yeah, she says this to Dick Cheney. This is fabulous. She says, yeah, well, waterboard me if it makes him feel better. It's still going to take a week, she said, and then she walks out. It was my last call that day. I drove the entire way home thinking of 100 better things I could have said. Finally, I called my supervisor and told him that I might have accidentally mentioned waterboarding. He laughed and said I'd won. He'd stop sending me to the Cheneys. I don't actually know if they ever complained. And if they did, he never, ever mentioned it. Blue-collar work is insanely hard in and of itself. Although I've had any number of jobs, even when I had a good, comfortable, cushy job, I would almost always have a blue-collar job right beside it. So that stuff is hard in and of itself. Then she's gay. And she's got the short hair. And so she's got to deal with all the discrimination that comes along with that. And then she's a woman. And she has to deal with even more from that. Not just from customers, but also the people that work with her. One who told her that her vagina smells good when he was nowhere near it. And another that said, you can't really be gay. You just need some D. You just need some vitamin D from me. And then this happens. She went into one house and they were having internet problems. Bunch of dudes, gamers. And she said, well, I have to go into the basement to fix it. And the dude said, no, I can't let you go into the basement. She says, well, I can't fix it then. He didn't say anything, and I wasn't clear, quoting here, and I wasn't clear on where we were with the language barrier. He was Russian. So I added, no basement, no internet. He seemed worried, kept looking at the door, looking at me like a puppy trying to figure out where to pee. A large, heavily tattooed puppy. I said, look, unless you've got a kid in a cage, I don't effing care. He nodded and said, you stay. I ask for you. I told him I'd stay. I heard him down the hall, heard Russian, garbled words. A couple of doors opened and closed. His name was Ivan. Ivan came back and opened his paw to show me a gram bag of coke. He'd helpfully brought a caviar spoon and said, you must taste. I actually laughed. He seemed sad that I was laughing. I told him, look, I can't. I'm at work. I'll take it home for tonight, though. This was one of my first jobs that day. I did not want to find out what it was like climbing a telephone pole on cocaine. He said, no, no, no. You must taste. This time he emphasized the word must. I told him I get sinus infections. This is true and extremely annoying. He didn't understand. I pantomimed and explained a sinus infection in words like nose, coke, bad, no breathing. This made him happy. It was a problem I could fix. Stay. I was the puppy now. He came back with a little round mirror and a little pile of coke. He said, this is better. No cuts. And I was just standing there. I really couldn't figure out what to do. I hoped that this was some weird mob thing like when every Russian I had ever met forces you to do vodka shots and then you're friends. But I'm not great with vodka, and I'm really not great with coke. Drugs affect me. He stepped closer and looked older and very sad. He said, I am trying to say is safe for you if you taste. You do not taste is maybe not safe for you now. Effectively threatening her, taste it or this might not go well. I figured it was probably his job to kill me, and he honestly felt awful about it, so I took a bump. He was visibly relieved. He smiled all goofy and lopsided and said, okay, yes, this smart decision you make. And he took me to the basement. I think my heart attack started on the stairs. It was good, though. Best heart attack I'd ever have. I could hear it. I didn't know my eyes could open that wide, which didn't help me see. They had a bunch of sweet gaming computers lined up on the table, but with no internet, all the guys were hanging out on a couple of sofas watching soccer. The World Cup was on. One of the guys pointed at me and asked Ivan something. Ivan said, yes, of course. I understood that much Russian, and the guy gave me a thumbs up. I agreed that it was indeed good. I changed their splitter, and I got the F out of there. She finishes the story by saying, we got a new regional manager after that. He called me young lady. I told him not to. My old vet buddy said he'd called me an entitled dyke after I left the room. The company, of course, began bleeding money because of the whole nobody wants cable anymore. And she points out I was back to chasing points. She said then her ankle went out and she wasn't able to go back after surgery. She says her ankle never healed right. I needed a letter from HR to continue my disability. Just a phone call. But they moved the HR team somewhere else. They never answered my emails. She said, so now she works at a gay bar. The pay is awful, but she likes going to work. And she doesn't spend her nights worrying about where she'll have to pee. And she hasn't been called Larry in years. It's a lot. It's a lot of information. It's an absolutely long story. But I sometimes find you cannot fit these things on a bumper sticker. You cannot simplify these things. You cannot say she simply got treated bad. She got called some names. She kind of got sexually harassed. You need to lay these things out and lay these things out bare. It's hard being a blue collar worker. It's even harder when you're gay, and even harder than that when you're a woman. This story at the end between Lauren and Ivan, where he insisted, and she did not feel like if she could say no. Because if she said no, she felt pretty confident that she was not going to get out of that room. The Obama era decided to implement a rule when it came to sexual assaults on campus. And that is, we believe victims. We do not treat them like criminals anymore. We believe victims because so many women were so dismissed. And then, of course, when word about that travels around, then we end up getting absolutely nothing done. And tons of rapes and other sexual assaults end up going unreported. Betsy DeVos, Betsy DeVos, who was picked to be education secretary by Donald Trump. Donald Trump, a known misogynist, picked a misogynist to, of course, run the education department. And now she has decided that the way sexual assaults are handled isn't that necessarily that victims aren't going to be believed, but the accused, whoever they are, whatever their arguments are, that's going to carry far more weight than what the victims say. So in effect, it puts all of the weight on the victim to prove it, and none or little to none of that pressure on the accused rapist or sexual assaulter to prove that they didn't do it. So the rapists are, this is restoring the rights of rapists. The rapists are going to be believed, and it is the victims who are going to be met with skepticism. So the headline from Fox News by Kurt Levy, Education Secretary DeVos's new rules for Title IX and sexual assault will restore fairness across the board. Quoting here from his op-ed, following the confirmation of Justice Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court, the Senate Judiciary Committee referred several of his accusers to the Justice Department for lying to Congress, he says, reminding us of the importance of taking accusations of sexual assault seriously must also be balanced with a presumption of innocence for the accused. It is precisely that balance that the U.S. Department of Education was aiming for when it recently proposed rules under its Title IX authority governing how institutions of higher education and K through 12 students handle accusations of sexual misconduct. The overarching goal of the rules, which will have the biggest impact on college campuses, was articulated by Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos. Every survivor of sexual violence must be taken seriously, and every student accused of sexual misconduct must know that guilt is not predetermined. And he goes on to defend Betsy DeVos and her horrible, horrible idea, which will really only re-victimize people who have been sexually assaulted.
You wouldn't have your job if you weren't beautiful. It's very sad.
It must be a pretty picture you drop in Johnny.
And I'd look her right in that fat, ugly face.
She's gotten a little bit large. I don't think you should dress like you weigh 120 pounds.
I don't want to sound too much like a chauvinist, but when I come home and dinner's not ready, I go through the roof.
A person who's flat-chested is very hard to be a 10.
She ate like a pig.
You could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever.
The boob job is terrible. You know, they look like two light bulbs coming out of a body.
She's unattractive both inside and out. I fully understand why her former husband left her for a man.
Maybe she should feel that way.
There are a lot of women out there that, you know, demand that the husband act like the wife.
I've said that if Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her.
She's really a beautiful baby. She's got Marla's legs. We don't know whether or not she's got this part yet, but time will tell.
What happens if Marla gained this kind of weight? Would you drop her?
I'd say start working out.
I have no respect for her. I don't think she's very good.
I would say she's in the 4 or 5 category.
Right.
I like the way she used to look. I don't like the way she looks now.
There are two other women now who claim that there'd been sexual harassment.
They probably do love their names splashed across the front pages. You say, oh, hello, darling, how are you? And you get sued because you've destroyed somebody's life. It's ridiculous.
You have a young woman that was in his room, his hotel room, late in the evening at her own will. You have a young woman who was seen dancing for the beauty contest, dancing with a big smile on her face.
Planned Parenthood should absolutely be defunded.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion? Yes or no, as a principle?
There has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah.
Do you think she felt pressure to come back after 3 weeks?
I don't think so. I think she loves her job.
She wouldn't have felt a need to do that because you might have replaced her otherwise.
No. Although it's an interesting premise.
I have been better to women than any of these candidates, frankly.
The overwhelming majority of the comments that you heard the current president make in that preceding clip, the overwhelming majority of those comments came prior to him becoming president. Talking about his baby. His baby. When Ivanka was a baby, she's got the legs. And then he puts his hands up to his chest and he goes, we'll see if she gets this part when she gets older. All of this. And this is still the guy that we decided should not just be president, but that should be put as the leader of the evangelical movement in America. And it is against this backdrop, and it is with this level of poison, that the world that we have created, not just for ourselves. And by the way, whenever anybody is oppressed, we are all oppressed. It is not merely women are oppressed, sucks to be a woman. If the world is bad for them, the world is bad for you. I tell this story, I bring you this narrative, not to piss and moan, this is bad and that is bad and this is bad and that is bad. That's too easy. Maybe you see it in everyday life. Maybe you just see around the edges and you just see a little bit of it. And maybe it doesn't seem that bad. And if you're a white male, then it likely definitely does not seem that bad to you. But when we become conscious of these things, it becomes harder to ignore them. So I tell the story because I want us to be conscious of them, conscious of these things that are happening, and to start speaking up when we see them happening around us. You do not have to be a woman in order to stand up for women, to be an advocate, to be an ally. You could be anybody. You could be a human being. And I'm going to ask the same question that I've begun asking more and more in the preceding weeks. Don't tell me if you are a Democrat. Do not tell me if you are a Republican. That's not what should matter. What should matter is this behavior, this way that Lauren Huff is treated, the way that the president talks, the attitude towards women, the way that they're paid less, the misogyny, the fact that damn near every song on the radio right now refers to women as bitches first, hoes second, tricks third, and maybe women or girls fourth. Don't tell me your party affiliation. Just tell me if you think this is okay. And that right there will tell me far more than your party affiliation will.
As the person in this chamber of which the reprehensible and disgusting comments were directed to by Senator O'Sullivan, I want to make it very clear that I am thankful for Senator Di Natale for standing up and calling them out. That is what real men do. Real men don't insult and threaten women. They don't slut shame them, and they don't attack them and make them feel bullied in their workplace. I have sat in this chamber for weeks and weeks, months, and heard the disgusting slurs and attacks coming from a particular group in this place. And I, for one, am sick of it. And I know many of my female colleagues on all sides of politics are sick of it too. And I will name you, because you are not fit to be in this chamber. You're not fit to represent your constituents. And you're not fit to call yourselves men. Senator O'Sullivan, Senator Annie, Senator Bernardi, Senator Lionhelm. You day after day come into this place and hurl insults across this chamber, play the gender card, and the moment anyone stands up to you, you have the most fragile glass jaws of all. You
Order.
Are cowards.
Order.
Every time you get
Senator,
called out,
Senator
you
Hanson
refuse
Young.
To, be stand, to stand
Senator
by
Hanson
it.
Young, Senator Wong on a point of order.
I'm sure you picked up on it with the accent, but that person is not from this country necessarily. I certainly didn't learn her language here. That is Sarah Hanson-Young. She is a senator from South Australia. And after hearing too much misogyny happening inside the chamber, which she served honorably alongside other members of that particular parliament, she decided to stand up and speak out. And I love the fact that she said that you are not men. And you absolutely cannot be challenged because you have such fragile masculinity. It reminds me of every single serving Republican senator and House member right now, and even a few of the Democrats. This is not merely a Republican problem. This is a male problem. This is a hegemonic masculinity problem. Men feel like they should just be running everything, running roughshod over women. But they can't seem to handle the criticism that comes along with that kind of attitude.
To him.
Do you want them to rein in Robert Mueller?
What a stupid question that is. What a stupid question. But I watch you a lot. You ask a lot of stupid questions.
So what better way coming out of that last story, hanging into this next story, than to play a clip of the current president telling a woman that she's asking a stupid question? And the reporter's question there was, are you expecting Whitaker, who is the acting attorney general right now, are you expecting him to rein in the Mueller probe? And then he goes on to call her stupid and said that she asks a lot of stupid questions. This is a real concern because Whitaker was put in that job because he has said in no uncertain terms that Mueller should not be doing that job and that Trump is innocent and that Trump did absolutely nothing wrong. So the grand jury was set to expire. The grand jury that Mueller has been using for the last year or so, they were set to expire this weekend. So this show is now being taped on a Sunday, which will come out on Monday, the first Sunday of 2019. And the grand jury was set to expire today. The headline, first reported by CNN, a federal judge has extended by up to 6 months, the authorization for a grand jury that is being used by special counsel Robert Mueller to conduct his investigation. So, I said, I think it was on the last show or the show before, the last two shows of the year kind of ran together for me. I said, hey, we should get a report by February. That's what I was reading. Everywhere I looked, that's what I was reading. And now here it is. No. If he's asking for 6 more months of the grand jury, that puts us into summertime before we could potentially get anything. Bad news, we're not at all likely to get a report by next month. This doesn't mean that we won't get a bunch more indictments, up to including potentially the president. But it does mean that it will not be ending anytime soon if he just asked for 6 more months with the grand jury. Because what was supposed to happen is he's done with them. They release them. He takes the next couple weeks writing his report. It comes out in February. Well, 6 months from now, what is that, July? 6 months from now, he releases the grand jury or if he needs it. Because they can only be... You can only keep asking for extensions for so long, and then you have to seat a whole nother grand jury. And I think it's 18 months. I'd have to look that one up. But if he did that, let's say we got to July and that grand jury expired and he had to get another one, well, that would drag it out that much more, not just because they needed more time, but because the new grand jury that come in would have to be brought up to speed on what the previous grand jury had been learning about for, you know, the last year or so. So we're not going to get a report now. Doesn't mean we're not going to get indictments. We're looking at summer and we're probably looking at August until we get a freaking report. I am just as frustrated as you are. I want this thing to come out and I want this thing to come out yesterday. But it just looks like that's not going to happen right now. And of course, Congress has said that they are not going to protect Mueller.
Solution in search of a problem. The president's not going to fire Robert Mueller. We have a lot of things to do to try to finish up this year without taking votes on things that are completely irrelevant to outcomes.
So the Republican investigation that sought to undermine the FBI and Mueller, with the Republicans no longer in control of all of the investigative bodies that come along with running the House of Representatives, well, that investigation to undermine the FBI and Mueller has quietly ended, and it has quietly ended with absolutely nothing coming out of it. And for Mitch McConnell to say, don't worry, he's not going to fire Mueller, even though the president has said on a number of occasions that he wants to fire Mueller, at the very least, this long, stupid investigation to undermine our own FBI and undermine our own Justice Department and undermine the special counsel looking into the 2016 election fraud, Mueller, at the very least, the Republican efforts to undermine all of that are now finally going away. But this doesn't mean that Mueller is safe, and it does not mean that he will not be fired by President Trump. Excuse me.
Hi, Mr. President. Yamiche Alcindor with PBS NewsHour. On the campaign trail, you called yourself a nationalist. Some people saw that as emboldening white nationalists. Now people are also saying
that
the president...
That's such a racist question.
There are some people that say that now the Republican Party is seen as supporting white nationalists because of your rhetoric. What do you make of that?
I don't believe it. I don't know. Why do I have my highest poll numbers ever with African Americans? Why do I have among the highest poll numbers with African Americans? I mean, why do I have my highest poll numbers? That's such a racist question. Honestly... I mean, I know you have it written down and you're going to tell me. Let me tell you, it's a racist question.
And Mr. President,
I love it. You know what the word is? I love our country. I do. You have nationalists, you have globalists. I also love the world. And I don't mind helping the world, but we have to straighten out our country first. We have a lot of problems. Excuse me. But to say that, what you said, is so insulting to me. It's a very terrible thing that you said.
So he does this thing where he blames the media when they catch on to what he's doing. Trump gave a presser the other day. And by the way, that's a press conference. A press conference is you stand up, you let the press ask you what you call on them, you let the press ask you questions. That's a press conference. But he stood and he called this press conference when the Democrats were being set. Because the Democrats, by the way, we're still in a government shutdown. And the Democrats passed a bill to reopen the government. And then, of course, the Republicans decided that they're not going to take up that bill in the Senate because they said that the president would never sign it. So because the Democrats passed a bill to reopen and fully fund the government, therefore, the shutdown is their fault. The Republican Senate decided not to pass it. And then the Republican president said that he wasn't going to sign it. And so, therefore, it is clearly the Democrats' fault that the government is still shut down. When the president had a friendly House and Senate, a Republican House and a Republican Senate, he could not get his budget through. That's how we ended up with a shutdown in December instead of when the regular budget is supposed to come out in August. He could not get it through a Republican House and a Republican Senate, and they kept doing these continuing resolutions on and on and on, and then we get all the way to December, and the Republicans say, you know what, we've been voted out, we're just going to throw up our hands and walk out, and now the Democrats have passed a bill to say that they're going to fund the government. So clearly this is all the Democrats' fault, because the Republicans, you see how sort of convoluted this is, and it is destruction by design. So there was a headline that I read about the U.S. firing tear gas across the border. This is insane. On the new year. So what they've done at the border to make it seem that there's a crisis, by the way, there are fewer and fewer people coming into this country all the time. Immigration is way down, and it's not just down now. It's been down for about the last 10 years. So what the Trump administration does is they take away resources, they take away funding, they take away personnel from the border so that there's fewer people processed every day, which then causes a backup. And then when a backup gets caused, here come the cameras, here come the commentators, and they go, oh my God, look how many people there are. So they created a crisis. And then they just let those people sit. A few children have died while in U.S. custody. And then, once again, just for the cameras, they begin firing tear gas at those people trying to cross the southern border. The people that they have intentionally held up just so that they could get their photos and their videos of all these brown people so they could freak out the Fox bots, freak out the Fox cult, fire tear gas at them, you know, like the leader of any good evangelical Christian movement would do. And so often he's asked, why do you hate immigrants? Why do you hate immigrants? Why? And he says he doesn't hate them. And when he says he doesn't hate them, he's right. His golf courses, his hotels, they use tons and tons of people that are undocumented all the time. I played a clip from his housekeeper a little bit ago, and they talked about how they just had to speak up because the guy that they're working for was saying all these horrible, horrible things about them. And then we get this headline from Newsweek. Donald Trump's New Jersey golf course allegedly gave fake green cards and fake social security numbers to undocumented employees. Of course, Trump Incorporated says that they didn't do any of this stuff, and how dare you, and if anybody's got fake this or fake that. And there's another headline about how he, before he goes to his golf courses or his hotels, because Secret Service is there protecting him, what he'll do is he'll call ahead and he'll have all of his illegal employees, undocumented employees, hidden from the Secret Service so that nobody sees them. But we all know that he's doing this. So what's happening on the border? It's purely racist. It has little to do with anything else. It's totally racist. And when he had this presser the other day where he got up and just talked for an hour and took no questions, what you didn't hear or what you didn't see if you were listening on the radio but not watching the TV was he had three ball-headed white guys just standing behind him in the same shot. Now, when you cut out for the wide shot, you saw a few more people. And I believe one of them had tan skin. But the tight shot that most of the networks took was just him and three ball-headed white guys standing behind him. So the Democrats pass a bill to reopen the government. He calls a presser where he takes no questions and has three ball-headed white guys standing behind him in the tight shot. This did two things. One, it took the focus off the fact that the Democrats were trying to reopen the government so that he can walk away from the camera and go, damn, Democrats still didn't open. And then for those Trumpers, the white nationalists, the Trump base that's watching at home, they see him and three white bald men standing on their TV. And I think, and I could be wrong, I think that that was his quiet little shout out to the white nationalists, because as he stood there with these ball-headed white guys standing behind him, he just barked about how much he hates brown people.
A fantastic fulfillment of Osama bin Laden's vision by Donald J. Trump. What Osama bin Laden hoped to provoke was a war of civilization, a war between the West and 1 billion Muslims. And so what Donald Trump and this Muslim ban signal to the world is that Muslims are not welcome here. That this is, whether the conservative justices say that in fact this is about executive power, the president's clear intent was to impose a religious test. And that is as fundamentally un-American as anything that he's done over the course of this presidency. The only force in the world that has the power to defeat extremist Islamic radicalism is moderate Islam.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet Rashida Tlaib, who was giving a speech at a MoveOn.org event shortly after she had been elected. And of course, she's being taped by somebody in the audience. We're going to do the tale of two tapes here. And you've probably already heard the clip of what Rashida Tlaib said. And the reason I play this clip of Steve Schmidt talking about the Muslim ban was Rashida Tlaib herself is a Muslim. And while standing up and giving a speech in front of a friendly crowd, she said something interesting.
People love you and you win. Woo! And when your son looks at you and says, Mama, look, you won. Bullies don't win. And I said, baby, they don't. Because we're going to go in there. We're going to impeach the mother.
And the crowd goes wild. Now, here's why I do not have a problem with Rashida Tlaib saying that. She is a Muslim. The current president ran on one of the things he was going to do was ban all Muslims from coming into the country. And with that, we now have another Muslim in Congress. When asked for a response, or once the news broke that this tape was out there, Rashida Tlaib tweeted out, I will always speak truth to power, hashtag unapologetically me. Rashida gets to say this. And although this is not the language that I would have used, and I'm not that as much as I don't care for the president, I'm not a super big fan of impeachment because I've never, ever seen it work before. She gets to say this, she gets to do like this, and she gets to feel like this. But here comes Trump's white nationalist, oh my God, how dare she talk like that? Well, how about this, white nationalists, Trump base, listen up. Just pretend that she did not say that we're going to impeach the MF-er. Instead, you can pretend that she said that she was going to move on him like a bitch and grab him by the pussy, since that is really more the language that you're comfortable with. Are we fair? Are we good? Okay. So, this, of course, creates a huge problem for Nancy Pelosi. And Nancy Pelosi, who was doing a town hall with Joy Reid on MSNBC, Nancy Pelosi was asked about it. And Nancy Pelosi, if you're asking my opinion, and if you're here, you clearly are, Nancy Pelosi's response to this was almost poetry.
Speaker Pelosi, last night at a reception for MoveOn.org, one of your new members, Rashida Tlaib, who is newly elected Congresswoman from Michigan, used some colorful language to talk about what would happen to Donald Trump, to the president, saying, quote, we're going to go in and impeach the MF-er. Your reaction to that comment?
I probably have a generational reaction to it, but in any event, I'm not in the censorship business. Mm-hmm. I don't think that, I mean, I don't like that language. I wouldn't use that language. Mm-hmm. I don't, again, establish any language standards for my colleagues, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's anything worse than what the president has said.
Fair enough, but I guess the question would be, does that kind of discussion of impeachment on that level help the cause of oversight in general, or does it make impeachment more likely, less likely? Does it impact the actual trajectory of oversight?
I think it probably consolidates his base, but I don't think they need much consolidation. I don't think it makes that much difference. No.
So you're not concerned at all about the way that the president's base will react to the idea of an incoming Democratic caucus coming in with the idea already pre-baked into the cake, they're going to go and get him. You guys are going to go get him.
Well, you have to weigh the equities. That is not the position of the House Democratic Caucus.
Sure.
The equity to be weighed is that's freedom of speech of an individual member. As I say, generationally, that would not be language I would use.
Sure.
But nonetheless, I don't think we should make a big deal of it. I really don't.
Okay.
I really don't. That's probably the way people talk around. Again, I'm a grandmother, and that's a different story.
Right.
But it is, it's really, words have weigh a ton. And the president has to realize that his words weigh a ton, too. And some of the words that he used has a direct impact on people's lives. My colleagues' comments do not have an impact on people's lives.
So the president's words have weight. Of course, the president was asked about this, too. Have you heard what she said about you? Of course, he gave some long, rambling answer about how he shouldn't be impeached and there was no collusion. And then he finally got back to actually answering the question about what he thought about what Rashida Tlaib said.
A comment about the freshman congressperson's comments specifically about...
Well, I thought her comments were disgraceful. This is a person that I don't know. I assume she's new. I think she dishonored herself, and I think she dishonored her family. Using language like that in front of her son and whoever else was there, I thought that was a great dishonor to her and to her family. I thought it was highly disrespectful to the United States of America. Yes.
So Trump's base is outraged. Of course, the media is outraged. Oh, my God, how could she say this? And look, maybe they have a point, because it's not like there's a tape out there somewhere of Trump saying the exact same. Hold up. Roll the tape.
Somebody said, well, what would you do? What can you do? So easy. I drop a 25% tax on China. And, you know, I said to somebody that is really the messenger. The messenger is important. I could have one man say, we're going to tax you 25%. And I could say another. Listen, you motherfuckers. Now, you said the same exact thing. You said the same exact thing, but it's a different messenger.
Now, it's a little hard to hear, and of course, I edited it because I don't put swears into the show. But what you heard Trump say there is that he, listen, you MFers, and he was talking about the Chinese. This is when he was running for president in 2011. He gave these remarks at a speech in Las Vegas shortly before he dissolved his campaign that year. Now, it's absolutely disgraceful when the Muslim woman says it. The Muslim woman who belongs to this minority that you, the president, thought should be just kicked out of the country or not allowed to come into the country at all. And we should be outraged that she talks like this when the president says stuff like this all the time. When the pussy grabber in chief talks like this all the time. And Trump to this day still uses these kinds of comments in his current speeches. I wish I had more time. I would play more of them for you. But it is about time for me to go. But I do want to tell you that the numbers are moving in our direction. The headline, one more before I go. Majority in poll want Trump impeached or censured. This guy got into office with only 46% of the vote anyway. Shout down to those of you that think third parties are a good idea. That's how we end up with a minority electing the president that all of us have to deal with. Nearly 60% of U.S. voters, quoting here, survey said that President Trump should either be impeached or removed from office or formally censured, according to a new Harvard Caps Harris poll released exclusively to The Hill. Asked whether he should be impeached or removed from office for his actions, censured by Congress, or whether Congress should take no action, 39% of respondents said Trump should be impeached or removed from office, while the balance of that 60% said that he should be censured. So, hey, yeah, it's gross and it's weird, all the stuff that's going on. And it's just a daily assault that we're all having to deal with when it comes to this type of thing. But let me say this. Hold on. Be strong. People are seeing it. People are realizing it. To a large degree, this stuff is not becoming normalized and it will not be like this forever. But just remember, once you get your democracy back, and you will, it'll take a while, but once you get your democracy back, you might want to hold it a little bit closer this time. You might want to treasure it a little bit more than you did before, and you really, 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 until we end up with a parliamentary system, might want to stop voting for third-party candidates. Just my opinion. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TFYCPO. Of course, you can find our show on iTunes or you can find it on Podbean. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at TFYCPO@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with you, our listeners. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off, and now that I have woken you up, good morning.